Chapter 1 of The AEF With General Pershing and the American Forces. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Marianne Spiegel. The AEF With General Pershing and the American Forces by Haywood Brown. Chapter 1 The Big Pond. Voila un sous-marin, said a sailor, as he stuck his head through the doorway of the smoking-room. The man with aces and eights dropped, but the player across the table had three sevens, and he waited for a translation. It came from the little gun on the after-deck. The gun said, "Bang!" and in a few seconds it repeated, "Bang!" I heard the second shot from my stateroom, but before I had adjusted my life-belt, the gun fired at the submarine once more. A cheer followed this shot. No Yale 11, or even Harvard, for that matter, ever heard such a cheer. It was as if the shout for the first touchdown, and for the last one, and for all the field goals and long gains, had been thrown into one. There was something in the cheer, too, of a long-drawn, "Hold 'em!" I looked out the porthole and asked an ambulance man, "Did we get her, then?" "No, but we almost did," he answered. "There she is," he added. "That's the periscope." Following the direction of his finger, I found a stray beanpole thrust somewhat carelessly into the ocean. It came out of a wave-top with a rakish tilt. Probably ours was the angle, for the steamer was cutting the ocean into jigsaw sections as we careened away for dear life, now with a zig and then with a zag, seeking safety in drunken flight. When I reached the deck, steamer and passengers seemed to be doing as well as could be expected, and even better. The periscope was falling astern, and the 300 passengers, mostly ambulance drivers and Red Cross nurses, were lined along the rail, rooting. Some of the girls stood on top of the rail, and others climbed up to the lifeboats, which were as good as a row of boxes. It was distinctly a home-team crowd. Nobody cheered for the submarine. The only passenger who showed fright was a chap who rushed up and down the deck, loudly shouting, "Don't get excited!" "Give 'em hell," said a hometown fan, and shook his fist in the direction of the submarine. The gunner fired his fourth shot, and this time he was far short in his calculation. "It's a question of whether we get her first or she gets us, isn't it?" asked an old lady, in about the tone she would have used in asking a popular lecturer whether or not he thought Hamlet was really mad. Such neutrality was beyond me. I couldn't help expressing a fervent hope that the contest would be won by our steamer. It was the bulliest sort of a game, and a pleasant afternoon, too, but one passenger was no more than mildly interested. W. K. Vanderbilt did not put on a life preserver, nor did he leave his deck chair. He sat up just a bit and watched the whole affair tolerantly. After all, the submarine captain was a stranger to him. Our fifth and final shot was the best. It hit the periscope, or thereabouts. The shell did not rebound, and there was a patch of oil on the surface of the water. The beam-pole disappeared. The captain left the bridge and went to the smoking-room. He called for cognac. "Il est mort," said he, with a sweep of his right hand. "He says we sunk her," explained the man who spoke French. The captain said the submarine had fired one torpedo and had missed the steamer by about 90 feet. The U-boat captain must have taken his eye off the boat, or sliced, or committed some technical blunder or other, for he missed an easy shot. Even German efficiency cannot eradicate the blessed amateur. May his thumbs never grow less. We looked at the chart and found that our ship was more than 700 miles from the nearest land. It seemed a lonely ocean. One man came through the crisis with complete triumph. As soon as the submarine was sighted, the smoking-room steward locked the cigar-chest and the wine-closet. Not until then did he go below for his life-belt. Reviewing my own emotions, I found that I had not been frightened quite as badly as I expected. The submarine didn't begin to scare me as much as the first act of The 13th Chair, but still I could hardly lay claim to calm, for I had not spoken one of the appropriate speeches which came to my mind after the attack. The only thing to which I could point with pride was the fact that before putting on my life-belt I paused to open a box of candy and went on deck to face destruction, or what not, with a caramel.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?